Good morning. Thank you, Destry, for doing my introduction. That was wonderful, because it wasn't in my introduction. I mean, but why are we here? We are here to because of what God has done for us. He has made us. Clean and pure, and has given us a reason to live. I mean, we have something that transcends the 40-hour work week, the getting of stuff, and the inheritances and the dying and, you know, all that stuff. It transcends all that. So, I have chosen to follow Jesus. And I am a dense person. Sometimes it just doesn't sink in. I forget where I'm going. I'm extremely short-sighted, and I run into walls, and just it's sad sometimes. Sad most of the time. And so, what I want to do is I want to talk to you about some things. There are probably things I've talked to you about before, but these are things that I keep forgetting, so I'm hoping that you keep forgetting them too, perhaps, and won't get tired of hearing that bottom from me. So, let's see here. I guess the title of this lesson would be No Trade Secrets. So what do I mean by that? I'm training a new guy at work, Well, all four of us are training the new guy at work. Once for a week, he rides with one of us, and then the next week, he rides with the next one, and the next week, so on and so forth. And I was reading in a magazine about a piece of equipment that would constantly had a flaw in the design, I guess, and the owner would take it apart to clean it, and then something wouldn't quite go back right, and they couldn't get this thing back together again, and it'd be locked up, and so they'd stick it in a box, stick it in a bag, and send it back to wherever they bought it, and say, please put this back together for me. And the one lady was responding in the article and said she would take it back to the back room, and she had this trade secret on how to unlock this piece and then put it back together. And then she would come back out and she would show the person how to take it apart and put it back together correctly. But she wouldn't show them how to they were jamming it in the first place. And one particular customer, about every 2 months, would come back with this thing in a bag and say, please fix this thing. And so she would do it. And finally, she said she wasn't going to do it anymore. And he sent his wife the next time with the thing. And either his wife listened to the proper procedure or he went to a different place because he never came back again. But anyway, those are trade secrets. Why do we have trade secrets? Because they bring in revenue, they bring in, there's something that I know that you don't know that I can get that $100 worth of stuff out of you, and, you know, and that's what it is. And that's not what we're all about. We're not about trade secrets. We're about getting rid of those, or not getting rid of them, but teaching them to everybody so that everybody knows how to get rid of their stuck parts. They know how to make the best decisions and to live the best life. Our perfect example, of course, is in Jesus. And I want to read in John 20 and 31. All right. Actually, 30 and 31. Now, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in His name. I'm reading out of the ESV, if you're wondering. It'd be slightly different. Jesus did it perfectly. He had everything right. He had a... I was going to write on the board, but I didn't. So, and then right up there, vision. That's one of the things I want to talk to you about. And one of the other things is being intentional and situational awareness. It's a military thing. Observe, orient, decide, and act. You use it all the time. You cross the street, you use it. You observe the street. You orient yourself. All right, that car is so far away from me. And then you decide if you can make it across the street before the car gets to you, or you decide to wait till after the car goes by. And then you act. You do whatever. You run, or you walk, or you wait. So you use it all the time. And it is incredibly important in our spiritual life. And it's I walk into things all the time. Like, well, where in the world did that come from? It just hit me out of left field. I didn't see that temptation coming at all. Well, that was because I had my eyes shut and my fingers in my ears and I was not paying attention. And I want to talk to you about legacy. You're going to leave a legacy, whether it's a good one or a bad one, and how we need to do that. So, hopefully, we'll see how this works out. Okay. Okay. 2 Timothy 3:16 says, "All Scripture is breathed out by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, for training in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, equipped for every good work." So has Jesus kept any trade secrets back from us? No. We got all the trade secrets written down right here. We know exactly what we need to do. All we have to do is read it and apply it to our lives. We have all that. There's no trade secrets there that we... No secrets that we don't know. Or that we don't need. There's things we don't know, but... Not so that we can't be saved and be with God. And then in 1 Peter 5, 8 through 11, it says, "Be sober-minded. Be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. Resist him firm in your faith." Now this has intention in it. Being intentional. Be sober-minded. Be watchful. That has your situational awareness. You're observing what's going on around you. You're paying attention. What's going on? And your adversary, you know exactly who the enemy is. I'm going to talk a little bit about one of the things I've learned about is Joy is not my adversary. She's not my enemy. Okay? How many people go through... Married people, you end up thinking your spouse is your enemy because just can't wash the dishes. There's dirty clothes on the floor. They gas tank is empty. And who does that? It's my wife or my husband. You know, he throws his keys on the counter and just, you know, all this stuff. We go around and around over all these little things. Your wife is not your enemy. Your husband is not your enemy. Who's your enemy? It's the devil. He's the adversary. He's purposely twisting things so that you focus on the wrong subject. So keep that in mind. Okay, the devil prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. He's looking for someone who's not paying attention. Someone who is got their headphones stuck in their ears, and they can't hear what's coming up behind them. Or they're staring at their phone as they're walking through the store, and they have no idea who's in front of them, who's behind them, or even really what aisle they're in anymore. And so watch what you're doing. And what's the cure for this? What's the cure for situational awareness? If you get inside somebody else's loop, it's called a loop, the observation, orientation, deciding, and acting, that's your loop. You do it at about every few seconds. You're deciding whether I want to listen to this guy anymore or if you're going to do something else. All right, let's use this example. Okay, you're going to some town. You're staying at a cheap hotel. It's in a bad part of town. You're in a taxi, and you get out of the taxi, and you set your luggage out on the ground, and the taxi driver, of course, wants paid. So you're turning around, and you're paying the taxi driver. Well, what you don't notice is there's two guys standing over there eyeing your luggage, which you aren't watching, by the way, and you're messing with the taxi driver, and so they're observing your luggage. They're orienting themselves like, all right, we can grab it, and we can take off with the luggage, and we'll be find some goodies in there. But you, being the good situational awareness person that you are, you kind of realize what's going on. You're in a bad part of town, so you start looking around. And you see these two guys, and you look at them. Just look at them. When you look at them, you interrupt their loop, their plan. You've squared up with them and looked at them, and they are going, this guy is looking at us. Maybe our plan isn't going to be as easy as we thought it was going to be. So they have to start their loop over again. They have to observe and orient themselves and decide if they're going to grab these suitcases or not. And so they, since you're looking, they decide, nope, not going to do it. And so they go back to look for a softer target. In other words, somebody who's not paying attention. That's resisting the devil. Just by looking at him, you can do incredible damage, or you can stop his process. You can reorient yourself to the situation so it doesn't hit you out of the clear blue. A lot of times I'll be going along doing something, and I was like, wow, where did that temptation come from? It just blindsided me. Didn't even see it coming. Well, that's not exactly true, because if I would have been paying attention and observing and looking around, I would have seen the signs that something was about to happen, and I would have been able to change, step inside the loop and change this situation. So, be watchful. This is one of my problems. Derek really nailed it for me I don't know how long ago this was now, but he said flirting with the edge of danger is the way I remember it. Maybe he didn't say it that way, but I can handle this, so I'm going to kind of play with this a little bit. Well, what is that? That's the leading edge of the club that's about ready to smack me upside the head. Okay? And there's a part of me that knows that. I know that's the leading edge of that club. And I like that. Because I jump in there and I get in this situation and I get my fix off of it, and then I jump back out, but I still had my fix, and I still sinned, and I still messed up. But God is a great God, is He not? He forgives us. He puts up with us. He dusts us off and sets us back up. And my job is to get smarter, to not do that, to recognize that I'm feeding off of that 2x4 that hits me upside the head, to recognize that weakness of mine. And one of the best things to do is in 2 Timothy 2:22. So flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. There's so much in this verse. The first one is flee. Run. Recognize there is this whistling sound coming up behind my head. Duck! You know, get out of the way. Run away. One of the best things for self-defense is what? Run away. The best way not to get kicked is don't be there. Move faster. You know, that's just get out of the way. It says youthful lust, youthful passions. I'm 50. They're still there, and I consider myself rather old now. Yeah, I know, it's all relative, but it's yeah, anyway. So, and pursue righteousness. So what's pursuing something? That's being intentional, right? That's having the vision. The vision is the part that I'm really bad at. I'm a very short-sighted person. I like keeping my head down and pushing with the top of my head, apparently, and just doing what's necessary right for the moment, and we'll worry about the other stuff tomorrow. And I think the vision is very, very important. Okay. Let's see, where was I? Be watchful. Nope, wrong verse. Flee youthful passion. Pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace. So put something else in there. Don't leave an empty spot. If you get rid of something, don't leave that space empty. Stick something in there. If you get rid of a bad habit, replace it with something that's a good one, okay? Because voids tend to fill up with something, and so you want to be able to choose that thing. So faith, love, and peace, righteousness. Along with those, I never noticed this last part before. Along with those. So when am I the weakest? I'm the weakest when I'm by myself, right? I am, when nobody's watching, nobody's going to know, and bam, there's that 2x4 upside the head again. Didn't hear the whistling sound. So along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. So be very intentional. Go after it with a plan. Ethan got a puzzle, right, yesterday. Yep, a maze type thing, I think it was. And one of the first things he said was, "Where's the end?" So, how, if you're going to chase this little ball, I think that's what it is. I didn't look at it that close. There's a little ball in this cube, and you got this maze, four-sided maze, and you got to chase this ball bearing around to get. Well, if you don't know where you're going, it could take you forever to get anywhere, right? Because you'd be chasing down all the blind alleys. So know where the end is. Find the end and go after it. In Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12, says, they use this in weddings all the time. We've been doing that lately. So, go on the weddings. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. And what do we always, what do we tend to call the third cord? We call that God, right? So, a threefold cord made of three different strands is called a rope. Much stronger than a piece of string. And two pieces of string wound together make a better thing, a better rope to tie something together than just one piece of string. So you can break just a plain old piece of string somewhat easily. But you start braiding it together, twisting it together with more, and it gets a lot harder to break. A lot, you have to get something to cut through. So it'll be a lot easier to be strong and do what is right when you have somebody to help you. And who is all right? And who has God given us? He has given most of us, not all of us yet, but most of us have a spouse, right? That's the second cord. Okay, we have two cords, and then if we have God in our lives, we have the third cord. And if we're fighting against the cord next to us that's supposed to be making us stronger, that's called rot, I think. The string is rotten. It's just not good for much of anything, and it's going to break. So be very careful who you're fighting against, and know who your allies are. Know who they are, and support them, and pick them up when they fall down, so they can pick you up when you fall down. And of course, God is. See, there I go. I'm giving the lesson on Sunday morning, and I'm forgetting. God is with us always. He is always there, and even when I forget, He's there. He's always there, and we can rely on Him, and we need to do that, and absolutely trust in Him. All right. So, when you're talking about spouses, there's always the thing that comes up: forgiveness. Because there's just something about somebody that's that close to you. They're just wound around you like a rope, And when you're that close, there's going to be irritations and things that just bug you. And so forgiveness is a must. And I heard this on the radio the other day, and I thought it was very interesting, because when I was talking about the dirty laundry and the dirty dishes and, you know, the dog hair and whatever it is that irritates you, and you start thinking, you know, I'm doing more than my fair share, and they're just slacking off. You know, they're always on Facebook, or, you know, just always out in the garden, or out working too long, or, you know, all these things. Whatever it is, you pick your irritant, it's there. If we go to Matthew 5 and 23 through 24. So, if you are offering your gift at the altar, okay, you're doing a very good thing. You're worshiping God. You are working on your number one priority in life. And there remember that your brother has something against you. Leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. So, I'm going about life and doing my thing, and somebody has something against me. So who's responsible for going to them for forgiveness? It's me. It's my turn to go for forgiveness. Okay, we jump over to Mark 11:25. And whenever you stand praying, forgive if you have anything against anyone, so that your Father also, who is in heaven, may forgive you your trespasses. So I have something against somebody else. Whose turn is it for forgiveness? It's my turn again. Funny how that works. And what is the last part of that? So that your Father who is in heaven may forgive you your trespasses. So, when God sent His Son to this earth to forgive us of our sins, we were marvelous friends and allies of God, weren't we? No. We were sinners. We were the ones that were beating Him, putting the nails in His hands. We were the ones scourging Him. We were the one not keeping the law. We were not His allies. We were not His friends. We were opposite, exactly against Him. So, the guy on the radio said, you and your wife have a big tiff, and you go to bed. One of you is laying on this side of the bed, and one of you is laying on this side of the bed, because you're thinking, oh, I'm the one that went and asked for forgiveness last time, so it's her turn to do it this time. He says, I hope you fall out of bed. Because it doesn't matter. It's always your turn to ask for forgiveness. That's just the way it is. Because we were terrible people, and God gave us forgiveness, and we didn't ask for it. He offered it to us. So we should always, it's always our turn for forgiveness. So when you start getting irritated about the petty things at home, remember that, remember your vision, remember what you're doing. You're trying to get to heaven, okay? You're not trying to get a clean living room. You're not trying to do whatever task it is. You're trying to get to heaven. And dirty dishes don't amount to anything when it comes to getting to heaven. Unless you do them, and then things get more harmonious. So, I guess there is an upside to it. But don't get irritated. And I can tell you that is a full-time job. I'm sure I'm it's a full-time job for Joy also. So, so the legacy. I used to... I had apparently, up until a month or two ago, I've known that a legacy is important, but I've gotten involved in working and putting out fires and, you know, trying to vacuum up dog hair and just stuff that doesn't matter so much. You know, working is important, but it's not everything in life. It's not the end goal, is it? How many people are going to be on their deathbed and go, oh, rats, I missed another week of work. You know, that's probably not going to be there. I mean, you might miss what you work at. I mean, you might miss doing some things, but you're probably not going to miss trudging through another work week. So, our legacy. Well, first of all, you got to have the vision. Okay, the vision is your legacy in advance, I guess. So, you want to have your vision. And I'm terrible at this, so bear with me here. Vision is knowing where you're going, okay, and having your plan in place to get there. Now, what plan survives reality? Probably none of them. They're like my notes. I've already trashed them. So, and that was 20 minutes ago. So that one's out the plan, out the window. So, but you want to have your goal out there so you can at least be heading in the right direction. You can know where to go, turn back to when you get off track. And then your legacy is the trail you leave behind you. So you got people that are coming up behind you that are following your trail. And what you want to do is you want to leave a clear enough trail so that they know where they're going. So they know, the way I like to, when I was teaching Taekwondo, I like to tell people, you want to do your techniques clear enough that the guy next to you can cheat off of what you're doing. Because when he forgets what he's doing, he can look over at you, and go, oh, that's what was next. And he can do that. And so that's what we want to do in life. We want to be the example of when somebody else gets off the trail, they can look over at you and go, oh, that's where I need to be, and then get back over there and get back on. That, in my opinion, is a good legacy, when somebody cheats off of you, when they're using your example as the right thing to do. And what helps me with my observation of my legacy, I guess, or making sure I'm doing the right things, is knowing that there's people watching me. There's people depending on me for an example. There's people looking up to me, or there's people that rely on me, and so that's a responsibility, and that helps me keep my act together. All right, let's okay, let's go to 2 Timothy 2 verse 2. And what you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. So, no trade secrets. If you know something that in your spiritual walk will help somebody else not trip over the same rock, then we need to share that. We need to let that be known. We need to work like it's all up to us, but to, let's see, we're on a multi-personal job. Okay, this is my philosophy at work. So most of the time I work by myself, but occasionally we have jobs that are too big. It's too big. I can't pick it up. So it'll be 2-3-man jobs. And my philosophy is that I'm going to work, like I'm going to do the whole thing by myself. And if somebody else wants to jump in and help, that's great. If somebody else wants to jump in and lead, then my job is to figure out what the next step is and support them in that leadership, or to do whatever it is they're avoiding doing, which that happens a lot as well. But so my job is to do the whole thing or help somebody else do their part. And that helps me with my frustration with other people, because we have one guy that likes to stand around and act nervous and act like he's doing stuff and just basically be a shadow to whoever's doing stuff. And I work with him a lot. And so I just decided, all right, I'm going to do everything. And if he does something, good. If he doesn't, I guess that's fine. So that's kind of what we have to do here. I have to work out my salvation with fear and trembling. And if you're going to jump in there and help me, that is great. I will love it and welcome you in to the job, and we will work together. But if you want to lead, I will jump in right behind you, and I will try and support that and do the next step and do what's necessary. So anyway, we got to work like it. Nobody's going to help us, but we got to work with everybody else and help them and do our part to help everybody else. So that's probably as clear as mud, but I hope it came across better than it sounded to me anyway. So that's my thoughts for this morning. I just make a plan, follow through with it, and pay attention to yourself. If you're paying attention, you can avoid a lot of trouble just by knowing your own little tics and bad habits. And know who your allies are and support them and help them through their troubles too. So if we'll offer the invitation this time, if you want to be a part of all this, and it's the greatest thing on earth. All of my problems have been solved. All I got to do is realize it and follow through with it and do my part. So we'll offer the invitation as we stand and sing the closing song.